Good morning. It's good to be back, actually. So if you look at that map up there, you'll probably understand where I was a couple of weeks ago. So that's from Flight Tracker, and I had gone to India. So I was on my way to India, and it was a complicated journey because I went to London in the morning for a meeting and then made my way to Heathrow. And I was very excited because flying in the Airbus 380, which is a new super jumbo. Got a seat. No one next to me. Two seats empty. I said, this is heaven. Now I'm going to I looked through the movies list, but then I said, no, I should do some work. So I got all my papers, my checkbook and everything because I was starting getting ready for all the work in India. And now this is about time for the aircraft doors to close. And there comes this mild mannered man with a lady who was well-nourished, heaving and panting, wheezing, carrying enormous amount of hand luggage. The first thing they did, I mean, they got my things out and they started arranging stuff. Now, I'm just sitting there and I'm trying to be a good Christian. I have very good thoughts. Anyway, she settled down on the seat near the window. I was in the aisle. This chap sits in the middle and everything is settled, safety announcements over, aircraft is taxiing, and then he reaches out a hand and introduces himself and asks me promptly what I did. And I am very cautious to tell people what I do, particularly on flights to India, because I can spend the next 6 hours discussing people's bowel problems, which I certainly didn't intend to do. So I said, I do lots of things. I said, yes, but I do a lot of work for ministry. So he thought it's one of the ministries. He didn't understand. So what exactly do you say? So I said, I'm a lifestyle evangelist. So now he was trying to figure out what this is. So now he looked at his wife. They spoke rapidly in some Indian language. And I heard the word lifestyle go up and down. And then she had a look at my checkbook. And she thought I'm trying to sell her husband something. So she sort of lifted a finger, and I could see him shrink. She just had one eye open, I think, because she was half asleep. And it was so, I could see him shrink in fear. That was it. 8 hours, not a peep out of him. Right? And that was really a manifestation of fear. Right? And that brings me to what I do really think that right now God's using me in lifestyle issues, and wherever I go, and wherever I get a chance to speak, I do address lifestyle issues. And that brings me to the topic of what I wish to speak today, and that's dealing with fear. And I'm sure you've heard lots of messages, lots of teaching, and received a lot of teaching on this, but you can probably receive one more. And that's a process called reinforcement. So let's face it, we all have fears. We've experienced fear at one time or the other in our lives. Some are silly, some are real, some are imaginary. But the question you need to ask yourself is, what are you afraid of? It's probably one of the oldest emotions that man has, and sometimes it can be totally irrational. Now, you probably wonder what that is, so I've got to tell you another story. There is this lady who pulls into a parking lot in America. This is an often repeated story in Christian circles, by the way. I'm not sure how true it is, but never mind. And she sees a lady kind of slumped over her steering wheel. She's not looking very good. Her eyes are open. She's looking a bit pale, and she's sweaty. And this lady wonders whether she should intervene or not, but then she decides against it. She goes inside the store, does her shopping, brings her trolley, loads her car. Now she notes that lady's slumped. She's kind of holding the back of her head, and it's not looking very well. So she knocks on the window. So that lady very gingerly lowers the window with one hand behind her head. And this one asks her, is there anything wrong? And she says, I think I've been shot in the head and my brains are coming out. This is a major thing. So she immediately rings up 999. She gets an ambulance. The paramedics come. They break open the window. They get this lady out. And it so happens that it was a very hot day. And she had some biscuit flour in her back seat, which had exploded, and the door was stuck to the back of her head, and she thought her brains were coming out, right? So that was rather irrational fear, right? Look at this man. Everyone knows who this is. This is Joseph Stalin. Incidentally, that's a very popular name in some parts of southern India. People name their sons after him. But never mind. man who probably sent more than a million people to their death used to have 8 bedrooms in his house, and he'd sleep in a different bedroom every night. He had 15 cars. He'd use one at the last minute because he was so scared of being assassinated. In fact, he had people to even taste his tea. And that was the kind of fear that he lived in. On the other hand, that's a hospital in India called the M.S. Ramaiah Medical College. It's a private medical college in the southern part of India. Now, when I was under training in that city, we used to go there for some meetings. And at that time, it resembled a film set. Thankfully, now it looks complete. And the owner of this, was a multimillionaire, was told that if he stopped constructing, he would die. So there was constant construction going on. He died anyway. But they've completed the building. So, I mean, we can laugh on these things, but fear is such a real thing. And it runs, fear, worry, anxiety runs so deep within us. It's such a human emotion. The psychologists, if you look at textbooks and journals, I last counted about 7,000 fears and phobias that have been listed, and it goes on and on. You know, we are, some people fear the dark, some people fear getting old, some people are worried about dying young, about sickness, disease, financial security, what our children will do. We are so afraid sometimes of even looking stupid. Now, that brings me to a very interesting story about this man who heads a church in India. He was the founder of one of the largest evangelical churches called New Life Church. And in fact, Madhu and I were both saved while we were members of this church. This is Pastor Joseph. And he told us a very interesting story. So when he was a young pastor, he wasn't very well off. He went to America for a conference. He just scraped enough money for the ticket. And he stayed in this posh 5-star hotel, and he'd come down every day to the lobby to wait a bus to the convention center. And hotel lobbies, as they're early in the morning, we will get the smell of frying bacon, sausages, and eggs, and toast. Interesting smells. And he'd sit there. Now, he didn't have enough money, so he'd have his 2 biscuits, which they give you with your tea in the room. And that's it. On the 6th day, which was the last day, one of his friends came down at the same time and said, "Joseph, what are you doing here? Come and have some breakfast. It's on the house." Right? He was so embarrassed to ask. And he thought he'd look, you know, he didn't want to. He thought the breakfast had to be paid for, and he didn't have money for that. And he told us this story. He told us the story during a message he was preaching to say that be bold. And, do, you know, when you fear looking stupid, you'll only suffer for that. And so that's such a real thing. And we're afraid of taking chances in our lives. You know, sometimes we're also afraid of missing that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The wealthy are afraid of economic hardship, and yet the fear doesn't go. You know, they get very rich, and still they're not a sort of stable, even when they have a lot of money. In fact, politicians just thrive on fear. Look at the guy on top. I mean, he came to power just based on the fear he generated among the voters. Or even Brexit itself was just based on fear. Whatever it was, you know, politicians thrive on this, and they depend on fear to run their campaigns. And, you know, fear gets imprinted into our DNA very early. They could be childhood experiences. You know, when I was growing up, one of the favorite punishments my mom had was to lock us inside cupboards sometimes. it didn't really set a fear of the dark or make us particularly claustrophobic. I mean, we still continue to be very naughty, but it could have been dangerous. And there's a story of that little boy who his mom sends him to get something out of the larder cupboard, which didn't have a light. And this is at night. And that was at the rear of the house. And she said, "You don't have to be scared. Jesus is everywhere. So just get a can of tomato soup from there." And he walks in, and he doesn't want to enter that. So he says, "Jesus, could you just pass me the tomato soup?" You know? So, I mean, you know, our DNAs get imprinted. In fact, there was a very interesting article in the Telegraph where it said that even memories can be passed down generations, and they get imprinted into our DNA. And this can shape the way we behave and react to so many things. And even as Christians, you know, Satan uses this, because what he does is that he had power over us at a stage before, you know, we got Jesus in our lives. Now we have authority over Satan. But what Satan does is he reminds us of that power at times, and reminds us of those past incidences. He plays on them and brings them to the fore. Now, this is a very famous hunting dog from the United States of America. They used to hunt wild boar with these dogs. Can you imagine? But There's a story about a group of these dogs. They used to be terribly scared of chickens. Because the time when they were puppies in a yard, the chickens were bigger than them. And the chickens used to bully them. So while they'd go and hunt wild boar, the minute they saw a chicken, they'd get scared. And that is because that fear was imprinted into their DNA. You know, an author put it so nicely. He said, we are not sick all the time. We're not sinning all the time. But most people are afraid of something or somebody all the time. And that is, I think, none of us are immune from that. Now, fear can be good. Fear can be bad. As a doctor, I recognize good fear. And we are always cautious and extremely apprehensive about medicines, their side effects. In fact, as we get older, as physicians, you only become more careful. And actually, you realize that, you know, drugs are just chemicals that you're prescribing for patients, and you have to be extremely cautious about them. So a reasonable and normal fear is not a bad thing, and especially in the armed forces, again, you know, where I served a part of my life, they used to use a bit of fear to discipline you, but I don't think it was such a bad thing, because you had a certain deference to authority, and a certain structure was built up based on that. I mean, one wouldn't go to a zoo and pat a tiger on its head, you know, because you know you'd be devoured. There was a man who tried to do that last year in Delhi. He climbed over the fence because he decided to go and become friends with the tiger, and he was eaten up. He was mauled to death. I'm mortally scared of the speed cameras. Even after I've crossed a speed camera, I just look down and I check and I say, gosh, I hope I wasn't really going over this speed limit. You know, now there's this wonderful story about a lady, not this one. This is just a staged photograph, but she was really upset about these people who never slow down in front of the school. And there were little children in that school. So what she did, she wore a dark blue shirt in America, which is what most of the police officers wear. She sat in her car and she took her hairdryer and she would just pass, sort of show it out of the window at cars passing, and everyone slowed down. And that's not a bad fear, is it, if you see, because, you know what, it had a dramatic effect and it modified people's behavior. So it's a very influential thing. And certainly, even when we have fears about our health and our well-being, we would certainly cut down on so many things that are not good for us. And it certainly keeps us spiritually healthy as well. And the only fear that actually all of us should have is the fear of God, because it would keep us from straying. On the other hand, there are bad fears, which of course I'll talk about in a little more detail now, but these are the ones that can cause us harm physically, mentally, and spiritually. In fact, panic is fear out of control. Now, I deal with one such fear very often, and that's the fear of MRI scans. Now, if you look at an MRI scanner, and I didn't show a picture because it's possible that someone might need one somewhere, and I certainly didn't want to make you phobic about it, but it does look like a little submarine, and it's not a very pleasant thing to go inside an MRI room, and a lot of my patients flatly refuse to undergo MRIs. That's it. And they say, give me anesthetic. And I tell them that anesthetic is a lot more dangerous because, you know, you have to get a general anesthetic. But they just simply refuse. And I said, it's so important for you to have an MRI because I won't be able to give you a diagnosis without that. But they're so phobic about it and so fearful. Now, that's a bad fear because until in history, nobody's ever got stuck in an MRI machine. And certainly no one's got injured. But it's a fear of closed spaces. Now, what does fear do to us as Christians? And I'll go through a few points. I didn't show them up on the screen because I just thought they'd just run from one to the other. The first thing that it does is that fear makes us turn to another power rather than to turn to God. You know, turning to other powers can be beneficial if you were to turn to God and turn the problem over to God. But it can be a grave danger when we as human beings, you know, turn either to maybe an escape through narcotics or alcohol because we are so stressed about something, or look to even man for influence. You know, you don't see much of this here, but back where I come from, a lot of people, and even Christians, when they come under pressure or come under a situation where they're fearful, will turn to man for influence. And the arm of flesh is all the arm of flesh, and it will always fail you. People also turn to astrologers, and they'll turn, when they have a crisis situation, they'll go to clairvoyants, and even here, they're so popular, mediums and things like that, because they'd rather trust that than turn to God. And the Word of God says, you know, that in Psalm 37, that do not fret about those who are evil or envious or those who do wrong, for like grass they will wither. trust in the Lord, right? The second thing that fear gets us to do is to become isolated, and we respond to our fears rashly, and we sometimes end up doing things. People tell lies the minute they're put under pressure. That itself is so wrong. When you get caught for anything, 9 times out of 10, people will stretch the truth, especially when it's the law, right? And this can lead to sin, and we tend to also, outrun our fears by sometimes isolating ourselves, even from our friends, and sometimes even from God. Again, the Word of God says, as you continue in the same psalm, that be still before God and wait patiently for Him. You know, don't rashly run and don't react. And I'll talk about this a little later. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. The next thing that happens, you know, when we are fearful is we leave ourselves open to be used by Satan, because he has a purpose in us being fearful. Satan is a master at using our fears. He can torment us with these, and he uses the spirit of fear to make us miserable. All our early morning awakenings when, we have that thing on a slow loop, running through our heads, the problems, is not from God. And that's the time when we go through maximum torment. And this is even a known medical issue, you know, where certain parts of your subconscious brain will bring those memories to the active and play them before you. So all you end up in the morning is completely without rest, stressed and tired, and perhaps just imagine all the hormonal surges and your blood pressure, the way it swung through the time when you've gone through this extreme anxiety. Someone said anxiety is like sitting on a rocking chair. You keep moving about, but you go nowhere, right? And what Satan does, he uses great methods using fear. One he does, he reminds us of our past sins, right? He uses our possibilities of our future because of how this situation will impact that, the potential for failure. He uses the certainty of criticism, and he reminds you about what people said or might say about this. And what he wants to do is rob us of our peace and our joy. You know, I learned this story in Africa, and I have to share it with you. Let's go ahead. So, when shepherds in Africa, cattle is great wealth in Africa. It is even used as bride price. People's wealth is counted by the head of cattle they have. And so what they do at night is they isolate their cattle into areas which are relatively safe and open, and they bring this thorn bush and they make a corral around it, and they keep the cattle, and then they light a fire and the shepherds sit in the center and the cattle settle down for the night. Now, what does a lion do? Some lions, they will try and attack herds of cattle even during the day, but as lions age, they're very clever. So what the lion does is it will urinate on its tail. It'll come to the edge of this fence and it'll flick its tail. So droplets of urine will fall among the cattle. They will smell the lion and they'll stampede. And that's what the lion's waiting for. He's waiting for that stampede. And as the cattle stampede, he will devour them. That is exactly what Satan does. There'll be little bits of information, little fears, which will then blossom into major fears. He waits for us to run and helter-skelter, even in our minds, and do silly things and fall prey to that fear, and then he will use it to destroy us. The next thing that fear does within us is cause doubt. You know, Psalm 37 again, as you go on, says, those who are evil are destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. But what fear does is it creates uncertainty. It erodes in our faith life. And so what it does is that if it's unchecked, it leads to doubt. First, we start doubting ourselves. We doubt our abilities, our friends, our family, authority, the structure in place. And then we start doubting God, ultimately. And that's what fear does. It just eats us away. And then finally, it leads us to be literally paralyzed. You know the story of the master who gave his servant those talents. What happened to him? He just put them away and he didn't use them to it. So there was no interest accrued of that, right? And that's what the master says, you wicked, lazy servant, you knew the harvest where I have not sown and gathered what are not scattered seed. Well, you should have put the money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, you would have received it with interest. But the servant who failed his master was called lazy and wicked in Jesus' parable was motivated by fear. So it caused him to literally to be paralyzed. And this happens so often in our lives as well, ultimately leading to failure. And, you know, we choose to be controlled by our fears. It limits us so much. I've seen people who have so much potential in their lives just being held back because they succumbed to their fear and their insecurity and didn't go ahead. And in fact, in Judges 7, God tells Gideon, he says, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Gilead. So, you could see that they just weren't considered to be worthy of success and they just had to go back. Now, the other thing about fear is it's very contagious. I don't go and sit with a lot of my colleagues at lunchtime. I realized that this was very negative testimony. One, everyone runs down the establishment. The question is, you're working for that establishment. It's not going to change. And you're certainly not going to be able to change it. We're all too small fry and too small sort of little nuts in that whole wheel. So the best thing to do is just concentrate on where you are and just be a little region of sunshine where you are. Do what you have to do it properly, because all this negativity will only get to you. And all the grumbles are generally brought out by a spirit of fear, because people are fearful. They're fearful of tomorrow. They're fearful of the future. And we don't have to fall in this as Christians, because our hope and our future lies in God, and He's the glory and lifter of our head. And so I don't go and sit there. I made it a point not to go and sit there, because that spirit of fear would get you. And then everyone has a false sense of bravado. They'll talk big things, but when you go away from there, you also are a little fearful. I realize that I'm becoming fearful, right? In Deuteronomy 20, it's, you know, the officers are there, and what do they say? He says, if anyone is afraid or faint-hearted, let him go home, so the fellow soldiers will not become disheartened too. Fear is contagious. And finally, your fear will catch up with you. You know, we've got power of life and death in our tongue. When we go on speaking things that we are fearful about, it will happen. You know, from Job 3 verse 25, it said, what I feared came upon me, what I dreaded has happened to me. And so we must remember that. And so even if you've got these fears, sometimes it's a conscious exercise that you have to bottle them up. You have to bottle them up. Now, God has commanded us. If there's one commandment in the Bible, I haven't counted it myself, but, you know, I have read that this is repeated more than 365 times. So it's once for every time in the day, right? More than for us to be holy, more than for us to do good, more than it, for us to love our neighbor, more than treat others as you want to be treated, it is do not be afraid. And there's so many verses in the Bible that exhort us not to be afraid. You know, in 2 Timothy, it says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power. And I'll go through that verse in a minute, because there's something more I want to share with you about that. Luke 2, verse 10, it says, do not be afraid, I bring you good news. And that's the angels exhorting, again, do not be afraid. Right? Now, God never gives us, exhortations or commands without giving us the equipment, the ability to overcome that. And even in dealing with fear, God has already equipped us. Right? He knows we can't do it on our own. And God knows that, you know, left to us, we'd probably mess it up. So what does God bless us with? So I'm going to look at four things here. The first one is the gift of God's power. And we go back to the verse at 2 Timothy, which says that God has given us a spirit not of fear, but of power, love, and self-control. It's not us. You know, it's not by my strength. It's by God's strength. And that's what, that I think for me as a Christian is the biggest thing ever, that I'm not doing it on my own. You know, when I face any situation or anybody who seems about 10 feet tall at any stage in my life, even now in the middle of my life, there are situations where someone does appear 10 feet tall. I know that the battle belongs to the Lord, and He's there on my behalf, and all I have to do is lean on Him. And that's why, you know, God has given us a gift of His power. Power to be saved, power to be a witness, power to be joyful, power to be a strong believer, and power to endure anything that is thrown at us. The second thing that comes out of this verse is a gift of a sound mind. So I think, you know, we can look at a situation and we can see it from God's spectacles. And we don't have to conform to the pattern of the world. We are already transformed in our minds. And so we don't have to be shaken by things that shake the world and be fearful of things that the world is fearful about. Because A, we got God on his side. He's watching over us. And B, you know, his power will work in and through our lives to take us through that situation. The next one, the third one, is that the gift of God's love. 1 John 4:18 says, there's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, for fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has been perfected in love. Now, sometimes I just wondered, you know, this is something I used to struggle with, that how God's love deals with fear. But it's the more we love God, the less fear we will have. It's a matter of trust. It's a matter of relationship. We realize that God is going to look after everything for us, and that relieves our fear. I've got two kids. I think you've all seen them. They don't have to fear at this stage because I'm providing for them. I'm looking out for them. You know, one of the things I went to India was to arrange for their fees and things like that. And as long as I have strength in me, I will provide for them. But I'm just a human being, and one day I know I shall wither, if I'm not already. But our God lives forever. And his storehouse is overflowing. And he loves us so much, he's just waiting to give us more and more. And if that confidence in his providence is so fantastic, we never need to worry. And so just like I have provided for my kids, I know God is providing for me. And the love of God will reveal fears. You know, mundane fears and big ones as well. Right? And finally is the gift of faith. Now, I'm not going to go in much into this, but I'm going to give you only 2 points about faith, and then I'll start winding up what I have to say. So faith is inbred. It's a gift that we have to still work at and exercise and develop. Now, one of the ways we overcome fear with faith is, coming back to what I was talking about, we must learn to respond rather than react. Now, when I was flying, I had to change aircraft at Dubai. And the flight from London was delayed. And I knew I had the window of about an hour to change this flight. And as we were landing, it was getting later and later and later. And as we started reaching Dubai, it started circling. And I could make out, because I saw the wings banking and I was tracking it on the monitor, the flight was getting late. Now, me of the human, the weak human, would have started first talking about the pilot and his ability, the airline and the issues, and just had a go at everyone in my head. But I decided to respond. I decided once an act of faith to respond. So I started to pray. It was very important to me to reach Delhi that very day, apart from the fact that I was actually speaking in church. And for me, that was actually very key, that I didn't want to be late the next day, whatever. Because you can sometimes be held up for more than a day in Dubai. They'll give you a nice hotel. They'll give you everything. They'll provide for you. But I wasn't looking forward to that. I just needed to get home. So I started to pray. I come out of the aircraft. We are late. Definitely. There's only 15 minutes now for the next flight. I come out of the aircraft, and there are chaps holding up boards saying, because this is lots of people transit on this flight, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Singapore, Pakistan, India, whatever, and various cities in India. So there was a chap holding up Delhi, and I said, I'm Dr. Lazarus. He said, oh, Dr. Lazarus, yes, you're a very lucky man. He said, everyone else going to Delhi on this flight is going to go tomorrow, but we got a flight for you 4 hours from now. We're going to get you on that one. You're the only one that we're going to get you on this, right? When we respond rather than react. Let me tell you another story. You know, so these two guys who come to repair gas mains, and they finish the job, and the lady of the house is watching them. They dug her garden, they repaired the pipe and all that, and now they were a bit bored, so their truck was about 200 meters away. They decided to have a race. They said, let's race back to the truck. And as they're about to reach the truck, there's 200 meters, they see this lady in her 60s, with her curlers in her hair, pink fluffy slippers, right behind them. And said, what are you doing? He said, what are you guys doing? You're repairing my gas mains and you took off suddenly and started running. I thought I better run after you. Right? So that's how we know when we have fear, situations of fear, we react rather than respond. Reaction, you know, is based on, now as a neurologist, I have to show you a bit of neurology. This is complex, but just bear with me. Is 95% of the times we react, right? And it's called a system one processing. And this is heavy in management these days. This is our primitive brain. This is our primitive brain, which is called the limbic system. We base on that. I mean, all our reactions are based on that. On the other hand, type two processing is when we think, rationalize, and act. And that uses our neocortex or our new brain, right? But as Christians, we are transformed people. God has transformed our mind. We are already neocortex people because we've got the mind of Christ now. And so we are not to react, actually. We are to respond, right? And so we are, because we don't have to conform, but we are transformed, right? Now, the second part of faith is that I think it pleases God when we have, no matter if you're 7 or 70, you have the faith of a child. We have faith like a little child. And that's the kind of faith that pleases God. So there's this lady who lives out in the country, and her daughter walks to school, a country school in America, Midwest America, so that's the place where you have a lot of tornadoes and things like that. And the mom is now, husband works away, the mom is doing something in her basement, and suddenly she hears the rumble of thunder. And she comes out and she sees these clouds, dark clouds, and she sees lightning flashing, and she's absolutely terrified because this is the time her child is walking back from school. So she gets her 4x4 out and she rushes down a country road to look for her daughter, and she sees her daughter walking back, and every time lightning would flash, she sees the girl, looks up and smiles. So she gets her in this, and she's soaked to the skin, and she closes the door, and as they're driving back, she asks the daughter, what were you doing? Why were you looking up like that? Weren't you scared of the lightning? She said, no, I was just smiling because God was taking my picture. That's the kind of faith. That's the kind of faith that pleases God, a faith of a child, to have faith and trust in Him. Right? So fear has two meanings. Either we can forget everything and run, or face everything and rise. The choice is yours. The choice is yours. I'm not going to go much further on this, but I know that I don't do it on my own. I do everything through Him who strengthens me. God has already opened the windows of opportunity in all our lives for us, and we shouldn't slam the door on Him, limiting ourselves by fear. Now, I'm going to end here in the next 5 or 7 minutes, and this is where I'm going to end. Anyone knows where that is? That's Auschwitz. So last year in summer, we went to Auschwitz we went to Poland for a holiday, and we decided to visit Auschwitz. We wanted to see Auschwitz. Don't ask me why. It's not a holiday destination, but there was something in my heart that I wanted to go and see this place. It was one of the most traumatic experiences of my life. I chose these photographs in black and white because it brings the starkness. It's beautifully preserved, the place. And the thing that comes through is the overriding sense of fear. That's Birkenau, that's the adjacent camp, and they've still got one of those wagons in which they used to bring these people to the concentration camp. They were sorted, some were sent straight to the gas chambers, the others were used as labor. They were robbed of all their possessions, which there are still, traces of those are still kept there on exhibition, and you had these awful conditions, and you can see the showers through which poison gas was used on those people. 1 million people died in Auschwitz. Apart from Jews, there were other people who died there as well. And when I had two images are extremely evocative of Auschwitz for me. One is this one. If you see that gentleman who's pointing in uniform in the peak cap there, for me, that filled me with the most horror and shame, because I was a doctor in uniform, and that's a German medical officer. And all he had to do, he used to point, live, die, live, die. That's it, one finger. Can you imagine the sheer horror of the situation? And as he pointed, and you can see him pointing, those are the people that have to be, you can see that old lady has already been segregated to die. So she'll be stripped of her clothes, her head would be shaved because they need the hair for mattresses and to put lagging in U-boats, and then she'll be gassed to death and cremated thereafter. And the other one was, of course, this old lady who's a grandmother taking her children. They're walking to the gas chambers. The children probably don't know what's going on, but the old lady definitely, I'm sure, knew where she's heading. And these are such evocative images for me. When I came back from Auschwitz, I was so traumatized. I think there was not a cell in my body that was not weeping. And I was so filled with that sense of fear because I know the world hasn't changed much. It never learns anything from history. And I was on the treadmill, I remember, and I was talking to God, and I said, I just couldn't understand. And God led me to this, something very powerful, which I want to share with you. And just bear with me. Probably I'll go 5 minutes over my time, but just bear with me. Of the photographs I took, there was a picture of the ovens where there was an Israeli flag lying. And that very day, God led me, as I researched this, to a story, an extraordinary story. In 2003, the Israeli Air Force was allowed to fly over Auschwitz. You can see Auschwitz below. Three F-15s overflew Auschwitz. And as they overflew Auschwitz, and you can see them flying now, those three aircraft right on top, they're coming over Birkenau, the formation leader, whose parents also were in the concentration camps, he's broadcast a message which came live, and there was a party down below who were praying, and they mounted an honor guard. And he said that we, the pilots of the Israeli Air Force, flying in the skies above the camp of horrors, arose from the ashes of millions of victims and shoulder their silent cries and salute the courage and promise to be a shield of the Jewish people. And God, and then I went back, and the F-15, one of the most beautiful fighter aircraft ever built. It's outdated now, and one of the most powerful. The code name for this was the Eagle. And the eagle is being used as a symbol of majesty. You know, the Romans used it on top. You can see that's the Roman eagle. Napoleon used it as his symbol. Lots of nations, including two of the most powerful nations in the world, have the eagle as a symbol. Russia, America, Germany, Poland, and even Serbia, among others. The eagle for us, but is a symbol of God. If in the Bible, it's a symbol of God's qualities, not so much a symbol of God. I mean, if you start saying that, then people might even in certain parts of the world start worshipping eagles. But no, the eagle is an image of the qualities of God in the Bible. They represent sovereignty, supremacy. It represents a symbol of God's strength. You know, the Word of God says that youth will be renewed like an eagle's. It's a symbol of God's renewal. You know, in Isaiah 40, it said that those that wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They'll mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run and not be weary. And it's also a symbol of God's protection. Because he says in Psalm 91 that who dwells in the shadow of the Most High and abides in the shadow of the Almighty, I will say to the Lord, you're my fortress and my refuge. And he will cover you under his wings where you'll find refuge. So there's so many symbols of God's qualities in an eagle. The eagle is a long-lasting, is a bird that lives up to 40 years. So it's got longevity. It's monogamous, so it's faithful. It also teaches its young. It's a teacher. So many qualities, so many qualities. You know, people in this world, you know, the state they're in, they cannot be helped being fearful. And no matter, and they're related to matters they cannot control. I look at those aircraft, the F-15 Eagles that represented the Israeli Air Force, and what a powerful symbol it is that, you know, there was a nation that was almost wiped out, and yet it's risen so powerfully and it flew. But they came almost 50 years late. But God as an eagle, God is an eagle, never late. In our lives, he's hovering over us. An eagle's got such brilliant vision, you know. An eagle is not limited by clouds. It actually soars above the clouds. So all these dark clouds of our lives, it doesn't limit an eagle. He's above that. And that's our God, you know. Our God is like that eagle. He's hovering over us. His protection is on us all the time. And if that's such a powerful symbol, you know, I saw those eagles over Auschwitz. It was reassuring. It was a great sense in my heart that, you know, of how God has, from that, he's used that nation to be built. But more powerfully for me was the symbol of the eagle as God's protection over us, as a cover for our fears. From the air, just let's go for a minute to a boat, and that's where I finish. You know, when Jesus was awakened in the middle of the stormy seas, what is his disciples? He asked his disciples, why are you afraid? That's a foolish question to ask. There's a storm brewing up. They're all about to drown. And he says, isn't it obvious why we're afraid? We're going to drown. Jesus knew he could stop the storm. So he thought the disciples knew that, but they didn't. See, we become fearful when our security is not strong enough to sustain us, our source of security. And what's that cure is to develop confidence that God's with us. So Jesus said, hush to the waves. They settled down. And the disciples learned increasingly that they could depend on God and on Jesus because he was their self-sufficiency in every situation. So God's promise is that he will never depart from us. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. He's like that eagle. He will be just hovering over us. And that's enough to actually quell our fears because we'll never face our perils alone. Thank you for listening to me.